At least 17 people were killed this morning in Afghanistan when a minibus drove over a roadside bomb in the southern Helmand province. Among them were women and children. The violence comes just a day after a triple suicide bombing and shooting in neighboring Uruzgan province claimed the lives of at least 19 people. Among them was a BBC reporter, Omid Kapulwak, and 12 children between the ages of 4 and 13, according to Reuters. The Taliban took credit for the Uruzgan attacks, one of which was aimed at the security offices of Matiullah Khan, a prominent warlord and U.S. ally who provides protection for NATO convoys traveling from Uruzgan to Kandahar. Khan escaped harm, however. The attacks come in the same week as the assassination of the mayor of Kandahar, a province just south of Uruzgan, and the traditional stronghold of the Taliban. Ghulam Haider Hamidi was killed on Wednesday by a suicide bomber who entered his heavily fortified compound with a bomb in his turban. Hamidi worked as an accountant in Northern Virginia here in the U.S. for 18 years before leaving for Afghanistan in 2007 to become Kandahar's mayor. His death is the latest in a string of assassinations of major political figures in and around Kandahar province to be killed in just the past 2.5 weeks. Ahmed Wali Karzai, the half-brother of Afghan President Hamid Karzai and Kandahar's most powerful warlord, was fatally shot on July 12th, followed by the suicide bomb assassination of the cleric Hikmatullah Hikmat, the head of the Provincial Ulema Council, just 2 days later at Karzai's funeral. Kandahar, the southernmost province which shares a border with Pakistan, is considered the most dangerous in Afghanistan. It is not yet clear who is responsible for Mayor Hamidi's murder this week. In fact, the forces arrayed against the central Afghan government and their U.S. and NATO benefactors seem to be spreading faster, even to the capital, Kabul. On July 17th, a key senior advisor to President Hamid Karzai and former governor of Uruzgan province, John Muhammad Khan, was killed by armed men at his home in Kabul. Muhammad Hashim Watanwal, a member of the Afghan parliament, was killed alongside him. Well, despite mounting evidence to the contrary, Ryan Crocker, the new U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, claimed in his first press briefing this week that the assassinations actually represent a sign of weakness for the Taliban.
They've had to kind of regroup and figure out what they can do. And in some cases, that has been assassination. Again, we saw a very similar pattern in Iraq. Clearly, these are horrific attacks, but they can also be interpreted as a sign of significant organizational weakness.
And that is Ryan Crocker, the new U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan. Joining me on the phone this morning is Khan Hallinan. He is a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus. He's been following the situation in Afghanistan for quite some time. Welcome to Uprising, Khan.
Thanks for having me.
It's hard to keep track of all of the violence that has been plaguing the southern provinces in Afghanistan and even the capital, Kabul, just over these past 2.5 weeks. In terms of the killings that we're seeing in Kandahar and the statement you just heard from Ryan Crocker, how do you respond to his assessment that this actually means the Taliban is getting weaker?
Well, this was very much the same line that the Bush administration had when the insurgency was going in Iraq. I think the term they used then was dead-enders, that this was a sort of an act of desperation by the insurgency. What's happened in the southern provinces is that the Taliban have done the sort of classic maneuver that every successful guerrilla force does, which is that when large numbers of troops poured into Helmand and Kandahar province, which is where the center of the pushed-in insurgency is, then what happened is those groups, they are either moved out of the area and went into other areas of Afghanistan, where we've seen much more activity in the east and activity in the north where it didn't occur before, and then essentially shifted their tactics from fighting to roadside bombs and to assassinations. I mean, it's a pretty standard line. It's the Ho Chi Minh's old line that where the enemy is strong, you disperse. Where the enemy is weak, you concentrate. And that's what's going on in Kandahar right now. And it's a sign of basically the failure of not only the counterinsurgency operation, but for that matter, the counterterrorism operation, which is what has sort of centered the tactics over the past 6 months.
Now, the country has been plagued with the worst violence in a very, very long time. There was a report in the middle of the year by the United Nations that the number of Afghan civilians killed in war-related violence rose 15% in the first half of 2011, and that nearly 1,500 Afghan civilians have already lost their lives. And this is likely not even counting this latest violence. This is the year that the U.S. is supposed to be handing over power. U.S. and NATO are supposed to be handing over power, some power, to Afghan forces. How do you analyze these statistics?
Well, you know, this step up in civilian casualties is in partly reflects a kind of different strategy by the insurgents. In, rather than getting themselves involved in firefights with U.S. and NATO troops and the Afghan army troops, they've fallen back more and more on roadside bombs, because if you've got a lot of highly trained and well armed people in your region, you don't get in firefights with them. You pick another way to do it, and so most of these civilian casualties have come at the expense of the Afghan civilian population. Although NATO. NATO killing of civilians from airstrikes is up about 15% as well.
And you don't hear that being reported very much.
No, you don't hear that reported. And it, what it doesn't say is it says, well, you know, the insurgents are responsible for this. They're the ones who's inflicting the casualties. Actually, what's happening is that the United States got very sophisticated in terms of figuring out these roadside bombs. And most roadside bombs were set off electronically. People use a cell phone. They would use some sort of electronic device to set it off. And the Americans developed ways to intercept that, essentially spot it and block it from happening. And so the insurgency shifted over to a much more old-fashioned method, which was pressure plates. And now what you have to do is sort of like the old-fashioned landmine.
Hmm.
You have to step on it, and it goes off. Well, that's going to mean that roadside bombs are more indiscriminate. On the other hand, the complaints to the insurgents that they're using this method and instead they should be using the old method is, you know, essentially telling the insurgents, fight the way we want you to fight, don't fight the way you want to fight. And that's not the way guerrilla war works. So even the step up in Afghan civilians really has to be laid at the feet of the allies, not at the feet of the insurgency. I mean, this was a natural evolution of that kind of that style of fighting.
Now, Khan, every time we hear about these attacks, news reporters and writers try to, and so does the military, try to address whether the Taliban is responsible, whether they took responsibility or not. Does it make sense anymore to differentiate between the Taliban and other armed forces that are targeting the U.S. and NATO? Because if these attacks are so widespread and coming one after another, is it worthwhile to even ask if the Taliban's behind it or if it means that the Taliban's growing stronger or weaker? Is it just a question of anti-U.S. and NATO armed opposition in general growing stronger, which the Taliban just may be one part of?
Well, it's both, really. What's happened is that the Taliban today is a much more dispersed organization than it was in 2001 when the U.S. invaded. And that's largely because one of the things that the U.S. has done, and particularly in the last couple of years, is to target the Taliban leadership. And it's done it with these night raids and these drone attacks and all this kind of stuff. And so what's happened is you've developed a sort of secondary leadership. And the secondary leadership is much less disciplined. It's much less, it doesn't rely on the traditional kind of a Taliban leadership. So it's a much more dispersed organization, and it is a much more dispersed organization even politically. I mean, in some places the Taliban will be banning schools, and other places they'll be encouraging schools. In some places they'll be banning television, and some places they'll be giving a green light on television. So there's that, and it is kind of spread all over the place. Then on top of that, you do have a couple of other groups, too, because you do have the Haqqani group, which is very different than the Taliban. They're allied with the Taliban, and they have been, at least in certain Kandahar provinces, they've been most effective in terms of the insurgency. And then you have Hekmatyar's Islamic Party as well. So it's a, you know, it's a complex mélange out there. I mean, that's the point that the Americans have never come to grip with, is that they're fighting a group of people that are very complex and range from, you know, university intellectuals to landless peasants.
And also what you point out in your article on the assassination of Ahmad Wali Karzai that happened a couple of weeks ago is that there is, it's almost as though while the Taliban and other insurgent groups are fighting for the U.S. and NATO to leave, because it's sort of a given now that they are eventually going to leave, putting power in the hands of the central government, that there is the war against the central government in full swing, a war that will continue whether the U.S. is there or not. And in fact, we sort of can expect it to continue once the U.S. and NATO leave.
I don't think there's any question about that, although the presence of NATO and the U.S. make it very difficult to take the step that needs to be taken.
The whole justification that if the U.S. leaves, there's going to be civil war, it seems moot because there is a war already.
There is a war going on. And in fact, if you look at the polls, what you find in Afghanistan is that the Taliban does not have widespread support. 12% is generally the figure that you see. But there's an overwhelming support, like a little over 60%. For people to have a coalition government. So people want a negotiation, and they want the Taliban included in the government. I think one of the, you know, the myths about Afghans is that they're generally talked about as if they're very warlike. Really what they are is they're very negotiate type. They manage to try to avoid war among themselves by negotiating agreements. And they get these jirgas together, and people, you know, people cut a deal is basically what happens. And what you're finding is that if they don't cut a deal, then they're quite fierce when it comes to warfare. But it's not their first choice. What's happening here is that NATO and the U.S. is pushing the Afghans in this direction of sort of continuing the war rather than backing up and looking for a negotiated settlement. The ground rules for a negotiated settlement are there. They have been there, since 2007. I mean, the proposals that were made by the Taliban are probably the place it's going to end up in any case. So there's really no reason for the current surge going on. There's no reason for the current fighting going on. And the people that are really suffering from this are the Afghan people themselves.
My guest is Khan Hallan, and he is a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus. We're talking about the surge, to use that term, in violence in Afghanistan just in the past couple of weeks. Well, what you're saying is leads me to ask the question that if the Taliban themselves are not that popular, they only sort of command about a 12%, 10 to 12% support in Afghanistan, the U.S. and NATO continued presence can only serve to strengthen that support because the Taliban are seen as against the U.S. and NATO. If the U.S. and NATO were not there, it's not necessarily true that there would be peace in Afghanistan, but it seems that the Taliban may not, you know, their support may be overwhelmed by support for alternative groups. And so the U.S.'s sheer presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think there's any question that's true. I think you put that exactly correctly. The thing which is sort of fueling the Taliban at this point is the occupation, is the war, is the ongoing war, and that if that were removed, if you would stop this aggressive patrolling, if you would pull back troops to barracks, and basically agree to negotiate with all partners. I mean, everybody's got to be there. I mean, it's got to be everybody who's a stakeholder has to be at the table, including some of the surrounding countries like Iran, Pakistan, India, China, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, etc. All of those countries have to have a kind of seat at this table because everybody else there has some interests. Primary interests are what the Afghans are going to do themselves. And I think that that war could be over very quickly. I mean, I think that we've gotten into this idea that this is a country of endless war where people just love to fight. It's not true. the Afghans don't love to fight. It's just that people keep invading their country.
However, it should be mentioned. It should be mentioned that there are some pretty bloodthirsty warlords who have been our proxies, our guys decades, and they're not just going to sit at a table. You know, they command armed militias. They're not going to sit at a table with ordinary Afghans who may want their rights. You know, I think it'll probably be more complicated than that. And I want to, you know, focus specifically on Kandahar and just the last few minutes of our conversation, because you wrote about what happened there and what happens in Kandahar. It really may be a bellwether for what happens in the rest of the country. With Ahmad Wali Karzai, the central government's main representative, the de facto governor, killed a couple of weeks ago, with the mayor recently killed, what is happening to the central government's power in Kandahar? Is there a sense that the political vacuum, the power vacuum left behind, is being filled?
Well, it's right now there's a scramble to see who fills it. And because what happened is that that Karzai represented one of the big tribes, basically three big tribes in the Kandahar province. And he represented one of those tribes. And those tribes have been traditionally enemies of the Taliban. The Taliban, it comes from, even though that's their base in Kandahar, it comes from a collection of smaller tribes. So some of this is very, very internal. I mean, it didn't even have to do with, you know, issues like Islam and everything. It really had to do with resistance to the control of these three big tribes. And what's happened now is that there's going to be a scramble for power among these power brokers. And, of course, the mayor of Kandahar was just recently assassinated. So what I think is that what you're going to see is a lot of kind of bloody internecine warfare going on here. And I think the attack on the Kandahar mayor, the assassination of the Kandahar mayor, may or may not have been Taliban. I mean, that could have been someone in one of the other tribes.
And in fact, the person who killed Ahmad Wali Karzai was a close friend of his, or ally, yes, at least, and not at least openly a member of the Taliban.
Right, and we don't know whether he was a Taliban or not. In a sense, though, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference, because
sure,
the Taliban says, you know, we did it, and everybody believes that, particularly since they've successfully made a number of other assassinations in the area. So I think what you're going to have is that you're going to have this kind of, you know, settling of who's going to be in power, sort of like what happens in the mafia, you know, when somebody gets knocked off and then the families go into a period of civil war to see who ends up as the capo. You're going to see a very similar thing going on here in Kandahar, which weakens the central government, which puts the United States in a position of where what they're basically doing is fighting a war while their allies are carrying out mob hits against one another in order to control the markets and control particularly the transportation.
Which is essentially a repeat of things past,
yeah, exactly.
Which means that this last 10 years of war in the U.S. has only served to keep things pretty much the same. Con Hallinan,
exactly the same.
I want to thank you very much for joining us today. And we will link to your article on the killing of Ahmad Wali Karzai from our website, uprisingradio.org, later today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Con Hallinan is a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus, and you can read his writings at fpif.org.